Welcome to this week's Building Texas show. I'm excited to sit down with Miles Murray, who we've visited with in the past, really early on. I think you were episode 3 or 4. Yep. And we're going to talk about Locole again. Locole has made some great transitions in their business, and I appreciate the story because it is really one of the early stories of the entrepreneurial work that we're doing in our hometown and the way we came together at our kid's birthday party. And the impact that it's had from there, and it's been monumental. We've opened up Das Greenhouse. You're a tenant in Das Greenhouse, your company Locole, and you're making a global impact around sustainability from here in Texas and beyond. So, Miles, welcome to the Building Texas show, and thank I'm excited you. To sit down and share the story.
Well, it's great to be back, and I will tell you, Justin, what a year that you've had, that we've had. You know, a few years ago, 3 years ago, I remember you and I were talking about bringing innovation to the Hill Country. And I said, hey, I've got this business that I'm trying to build that we can really make like a real impact and not just a keyboard impact on, you know, the idea around sustainability. And I think we made our first investment about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And what we've done with that investment has been, you know, 100-fold what we actually thought we would, you know, what we originally set out to be. It's been phenomenal. We've built out all the technology that we were aiming for. We built awareness. We've had a chance to meet with the Queen of the Netherlands. We've had a chance to brief EU Parliament, because the idea that we could have hardware that solves the problem of landfilling right at the site of waste creation just makes sense in a lot of people's eyes. And that's what I'm so proud of building.
Well, let's go back and remind people, Locole is a sustainability company. It's a hardware company with a software platform in it. It can be very technical, but at a basic understanding, you're taking waste, and in this instance, it's wood waste, and turning it into energy, charcoal, and we'll come back to that, and carbon credits. And carbon credits, for the investors, it's an interesting conversation because there are different variants of carbon credits, as I understand it, and some really have no value, and I think they're more political football.
Yeah.
But there is a reality of how do you change that environment, and how do you take what we're using and producing and turn it into something good? And that's what I take from...
Right. Well, it is a piece of hardware. It's a piece of hardware that is that didn't exist that I needed in 2009 when I was in Iraq, and I was pouring out my very last gallons of JP8 in order to burn trash, in order to prevent disease from developing, while I was also shutting down my generators that gave me communications and the power to cook food and these types of things. And that just kind of told me that, you know, there's an intense problem that is oftentimes not seen by regular society, and that is the amount of accumulated waste and manufacturing processes and farming processes, and just the amount of waste that's generated, especially with e-commerce and the amount of power that's used in the process, it's becoming prohibitive in many areas.
I've had some people approach me around cardboard. You mentioned e-commerce.
Right.
The amount of cardboard that the individual home gets today, and what do they do with it? That's waste in my mind.
It's a lot of waste.
But I want to, one, thank you for your service and your experience in Iraq. You're a West Point graduate. You've definitely gone through and seen globally layers that a lot of our listeners may not have had an opportunity to see, because you were in countries that are still rising up and thinking about waste and prioritizing the cleanup of industrial systems.
Right.
So is that where this idea for Locole really found its origin?
You know, yes. If I go, I mean, you mentioned West Point. When I was at school there, I had a theory that I wanted to study. And that was, what were the root causes of conflict that led to groups that caused sort of these sort of terrorist events or created these cultures that were centered around violence? And oftentimes what I've found is that there is an underlayer of natural resource responsibility, you know, a fair and free commerce, And I just thought to myself, like, you know, I'm going into a conflict region with a military mission. But while I was there and what I was seeing throughout my time in the service was that there's a broader state mission. There's an economic mission. There's a power generation and food, health, air quality, all these problems that really leaders of local societies are facing. And I wanted to take my small town, hill country, born and raised, don't mess with Texas. You learn to solve your problems with the materials that you have. You know, my grandfather was a farmer and he would always look for the resources around him to solve these problems. Yeah. And so that mindset, when I was in Iraq, when I was, you know, in other places around the world, I just thought to myself, you know, there's got to be a better way than just piling this stuff up and burning it. You know, so I started off with an environmental focus, and then I very quickly understood that there's the economic problems that are needing to be addressed.
It's interesting because what you're talking about, I have experience in manufacturing around the world, and you can walk into a manufacturing facility and know a lot about its management team based on the cleanliness. Same as you can walk into a village, a town, right, a city, a part of a city, and you can see who are those stewards and is there really a focus. Even in wealthy communities, suburbs, we don't think a lot about landfills, but it is a big piece of where does our waste go.
Right.
And so now today, with our initial investment, pulling it together, you've built the MVP, so the minimum viable product. Yeah. And I think you've gone beyond that because you've got a working prototype that's really a big incinerator is how I describe it to people, that is taking wood, turning it into energy and carbon credits. What's next?
So Rainmakers is our technology system. We called it Rainmaker because the carbon that we sequester out of these streams gets reinfused back into the world, and it requires less watering, and it retains more water retention. And a lot of our focus initially was about soil health and how there's just 70% of our soils that we've used to farm for all these years is no longer farmable. And that was kind of the catalyst for the business itself. Like, what can we do to solve this specific problem?
And when you say it's not farmable, that's because it doesn't have carbon or nutrients in right. the soil. So back to two types of carbon credits. There's the political football, and then there's really the restoration.
Yeah, I could walk up to you with a piece of paper that says we're going to save 40,000 acres of the Brazilian rainforest. And if you just, you know, put money into this, we'll dividend out, you know, $4 per carbon credit, and they're going to generate for the next 100 years. That works until that section of the forest gets cut down, or there's a forest fire, or there's a political change in sentiment. And therefore it's an unstable, unreliable, and pretty much valueless.
It's a paper exercise.
It's a paper exercise. And cap and trade has been tried in many forms and factors. What really matters to me was to not play the political football, but to say, look, I can literally in solid state form pull carbon that would otherwise go into the environment, into the atmosphere, and I could reinfuse it into these places that need it. So let's talk about where it's needed. Because okay. I think that's the bigger question is like, okay, you're capturing all this carbon. What are you doing with it? Let's go to farming, for instance, as one example. Yep. You go out to West Texas where there's all the pecan groves. And if you dig deep 12 inches, you're going to pull up red clay with no microbial life. There's not going to be any worms or bugs, roots of different types. You have a completely depleted micronutrient substrate within the soils. So that leads to farmers, in order to grow pecans and other crops, to pump lots of water and lots of chemicals into their crops. Those chemicals are expensive. The energy needed to pull the water is expensive. And we're talking about the rise of the cost of everything. The cost of growing food is going up.
And for people that don't, many people will think of West Texas and think of the desert. But if you go out there, you're talking thousands of acres of pecan orchard.
Thousands.
And I know it has water canals, it's got water movement, and they are the biggest consumers of energy in that region.
Absolutely.
For that electric co-op in particular, because of water movement.
Water movement.
But they have a tremendous amount of wood waste.
They do. And so the idea was, if we could put a machine on your farm that could take pecan shells and tree limbs that are trimmed in the annual hedging, and instead of piling it up and burning it, which, by the way, you really can't burn it out there because there's not natural rainfall. The water is all subterraneous. So what you have to deal with is piles that never go away, or if you're required to ship them off, you're paying for it. If we were to put a machine in there that could take all the pecan shells, we could heat it up just enough to where all the gas and gaseous type chemicals rise out of it and clean that gas. We can run a generator with it. Meanwhile, we've got all the pecan shell carbon, fixed carbon that still looks like a black shell, but now it's a piece of charcoal, just like a charcoal briquette. Or if you ever are in a campfire and you burn a piece of wood like that, you know, sometimes that piece of wood holds its form. It's just black. Yep. Well, that's what we do. We do it without allowing all those chemicals to be reinfused with that carbon. So we can push that back into the soil along with only about 20% of the chemicals, and you get a grander effect. And you can cut watering by 50%. And that's what a healthy soil looks like versus an unhealthy soil. Yep. And we're not going to change where we grow our food. We've got entire advanced systems around this. So we need to improve our soil. And that's just one of literally dozens of use cases for carbon.
In the hill country, you mentioned the piles that never move. We're in bird bands constantly because of the lack of water. And I think of the cedar clearing.
Cedar clearing would be, to me personally, Justin, as someone who grew up and has dealt with, you know, cedar water table problems, that would be an amazing mission for us to tackle locally. That's why I've actually been adamant about not going out to Silicon Valley or to Boston at MIT, where we competed and we won the Global Energy Challenge. And there was opportunity there because that's where a lot of investment it pushes in these kind of epicenters. But I'm like, no, I believe in what Justin says. I say, like, we need to bring it to the hill country. We've got problems here that we could solve with this technology, and I can still export it globally. Yeah. And so headquarters is where the heart is, and the heart is in the center of the hill country.
Well, and I'm grateful to that. It's been a big boost to the mission of Das Greenhouse and our entrepreneurial work in the hill country. And we say outside of the city centers, rural America is our target here, because we know that there's really bright people coming out of these school systems out in rural America.
Absolutely.
And they're facing problems, and they come from farmers like your granddad. They come from a work experience of, we're going to solve it because we're way out here. We don't have access to the Home Depot or Walmart right around the corner all the time.
Yeah.
But we do have these piles of cedar that we're going to spend a week babysitting that bonfire, because we don't want to burn down the ranch next to us.
Absolutely.
You're telling me
You're still not always successful in that.
Yeah, we still see that, some accidents. But you're telling me your machine could go out there and really chew up that pile, because you can take about 4,000 pounds of waste pretty quickly.
We do. So what for the more technically savvy people out there, we are a pyrolysis, which is a oxygen-deprived burn that doesn't allow for combustion. So there's no chemical transformation where we turn wood into ash.
There's no flame.
Well, there's no flame that's dirty, should say. And so in that process, we're able to take 2 tons minimum per hour of any form factor of a carbon kind of based structure. So whether it's a polycarbonate plastic, it's a rubber, or wood. And wood has many different forms. There's shell wood, there's soft wood, there's hardwood, and then there's farm residuals. And all of these have a certain amount of value that's built into them. Cedar trees in particular have a high heating value. That the sap inside of, if you've ever burned cedar in a fire, it lights it real pops. Fast. It pops. And so the amount of pent-up energy and the amount of fixed carbon that I could sequester out of that could be recirculated right back into our own community. And that's creating a market economy that's not just mulch for this type of stuff. And if we want to solve a problem, create a marketplace. Yeah. And so Rainmaker is for those that need the visual, it is a 50 foot long by 13 foot tall and 10 foot wide box that contains 3 unique pieces of technology. It has a reactor that heats things up and turns them into gas and solids. and the charcoal falls out the bottom and we cool it and it's cool to the touch and ready to be immediately sold. So now you have a 95% plus carbon purity that qualifies for carbon removal credits and has its own value as a commodity. Then all the gases that come off of it, we scrub them into a clean natural gas that can be used immediately to run generators. Yep. And then the final part, which is a bioliquid that comes out, is fully oxygenated. And so with a minor amount of filtration, you're able to create a liquid bio-based fertilizer that can be immediately put back in there. So what it is it's taking these materials and it's breaking up in their different smaller molecular chains, reforming them into a usable product that then becomes our raw material, and then we can return it locally. So local is a play on be low carbon locally, because our technology can be placed in any area that has more than 2 tons per hour of waste accumulated, which is the planet.
Yeah. You're doing this here. You have a manufacturing facility in the Pacific Northwest.
Right.
And you're doing it here because you're from the region and there's a lot of synergy, but you could be at MIT. You are working with JP Morgan Sustainability Circle.
Right.
This is a global conversation that we're sitting in a small rural area, but you have a footprint and a reach in this now. You've become a leader in the space.
Yes. And part of that sort of mentor protege relationship that we have through the Bunker Labs program that brought us together really talks about like, how can we bank an environmentally sustainability focused industrial revolution? Mm-hmm. That's the big conversation, because we can't look backwards too far and see a working solution. It doesn't exist.
It's always been vapor. It's always been this idea, and similar to the throwaway political conversation. Where's the action and how do you make it?
I can tell you the story on how we got their attention just for good content.
Okay.
So my co-founder and I, we spent the first couple of years kind of making biochar by hand. Just this charcoal, we did it in these barrels and we accumulated a ton that we needed purpose with, 80 tons worth. And 80 tons happened to be the same carbon footprint of the program I was going into. And so we just decided to donate 80 tons of carbon on behalf of the program to the Austin Remedial Brown site. And what we were trying to demonstrate is that though we can consume in one place, we can restore in others. And that is that cap and trade model. But instead of it just being a paper exchange, I literally brought a barrel of the carbon that we captured and gave it, you know, as a demonstration to the leadership of Bunker Labs and said, here's how I can try to demonstrate to you where we can work together. We create footprints, we offset them, we do it with real measurable evidence. And that measurability has been the biggest distinguishing aspect of our technology to others. And that's where all that software that I built matters. The telemetry of measuring how much mass weight of waste we've recovered, how much of it we've been able to pull into solid state carbon, and then map that methodology and the energy consumption against the carbon registries puts us as the most premier type of technology to get your maximum carbon value. And those are real. Those are not vapor type of things. Carbon offset and removal credits under the Puro standard are now trading between $80 and $160 a credit. And that's because it is a 100 to 1,000 year durable investment. My carbon does not valorize. It will not go up in flames. Once it's sequestered, it's sequestered for the next 100 years minimum.
So what does the European Parliament that you've briefed, what is it that they're trying to solve? Because we've heard this conversation of sustainability. I can imagine several listeners that I know saying,
sustainability has been an overused word.
Yeah.
Sustainability means kind of everything to everybody these days. I went to a carbon and methane conference in Houston and the number, like every booth was like carbon capture and sustainable practices. However, when looking at the science, it's much more of the same.
Yeah.
And so to pierce through sort of the rhetoric,
mm-hmm.
what we're talking about is really the adaptive technologies that are needed to meet the current demands of our world, which are higher real estate prices are leading to higher costs of landfilling.
Yeah.
Okay. The higher energy cost or the production of an import of oils and gases has caused transportation costs to go up. Labor rates are risen.
Yep.
So now what used to be a relatively easy problem to solve, throw it away and put it in a landfill, has been met with two unstoppable colliding forces. You have the economic problems that you're facing with managing your waste, and you have a social sentiment globally where people are wanting to see less wasteful practices. The European Parliament, when they came to Texas to meet with us, they wanted to ask about power consumption of artificial intelligence and the impact that that's going to have on the environment. And how could they possibly incentivize businesses in the European Union to be carbon neutral but progressive and improving technology and the human experience? What they don't want is everybody to revert back to something. That's the impossible scenario.
But it takes us back to where we started with your time in Iraq and in other developing countries where the resource of land was available. So landfills are the economic solution to this. Just put it over there. Where now you're talking to European Parliament, you're talking to urban people that... Yeah, we
live in a much more transparent world, you know,
even in the last 5 years.
Yes.
But the argument always from the listener that challenges this is, yeah, but what's China doing? They're really making the big mess.
Yeah.
But what I hear you saying is this is transferable. This can go into any market and can really help a developing country think more quickly about getting to this model. And instead of filling up land, let's value the land differently and restore it. Am I capturing that correctly, or am I making too big of a leap?
No, you know, there was kind of a lot there. So let's unpack the China. Other people admit more than we do. I've seen the graphic. I understand the talking points. Any country that's rapidly industrializing is going to start as a wood and coal economy. It's the natural maturation of nations. However, you have some areas that have advanced 3 to 4 generations of technology while others have not advanced at all. But with more global communication capabilities, evidence of wrongdoing or evidence of a lack of a healthy or acceptable practice is faster than any person, any company, any government can respond to. And so more and more, there's just all these use cases that are popping up where people want action, but what is the solution? The solution is not to just shut down industry. China's not going to stop providing power to their populace. But I can assure you, the people living outside of those coal plants are not loving the amount of emissions that are being blown into their communities either.
Yeah.
And I think we have to, as a country and as a people, we have to separate ourselves from the people that live in these areas versus the governments that preside over these regions. So my interaction with public-private industry, I've worked with the Air Force. I work with the Texas Military Department. We're working with the Forestry Service. We're working with the Department of Energy. And the idea is this. If there are ways that we can efficiently convert waste into usable utility, whether that is fertilizer replacement with non-chemical based solutions, or there is renewable natural gas and compressed natural gas that can be derived from sustainable crops. It is a continuation of what we've kind of been building towards, but those types of technologies need to be exported.
Yep.
And America has, for the longest time since the 80s, has been importing far more than we were exporting. But now's the time for American reshoring American manufacturing. So we talk about, yes, China's got a problem out there. And what are we doing as a nation? Should we do nothing? As an American and as a soldier, I just don't ascribe to the idea that just because somebody else is doing it wrong, it means it gives me a pass to not do it right. And I can tell you this, I'm not shy of controversy in this topic. All right. We have a world. There are microplastics literally in every food source that we can detect.
Yeah.
And the oceans have microplastics that are being located everywhere. we have higher emissions in our atmosphere, whether that's a catalyst or cause or whatever with climate change, it's irrelevant to me. What's really relevant to me is that on the ground in very specific communities, such as the community that we're in right now, small town America, small town China, small town wherever, you have centralized powers, long transmission lines, and policies that really are not anything that the local people can do anything about. This is a countermeasure to over-industrializing and over-centralizing. It's decentralizing. And it's putting power and capability and technology in places that don't have it yet. Yeah. And I can advance areas from pre-industrial revolution or right in industrial revolution to the new industrial revolution is one that is zero waste as possible because it's good business. Yeah. And we don't like to litter in our forests, in our rivers. Why would we litter elsewhere? It all ends up in the water tables, no matter what. And so if you want to know kind of like where I see this, I see me partnering with the largest banks in industry across the globe to fund massive green projects that have real measurable impact, yield a net positive energy profile so that we're not just, you know, ripping off Peter to pay Paul.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that these technologies and this methodology and this culture of utilizing a more circular approach to product development and to commerce takes hold. I see it all over Europe. I see it in other countries. I see it mainly in America too. I know what the talking points are on X and Twitter and all the politicians, but if I go to my coffee shop, I go to the Hill Country, you know, inn over in Kerrville and have breakfast there, and I brought up the topic, wouldn't it be great if we could just remove all this cedar tree waste and turn it into clean energy? Everybody's going to agree to that.
Yeah.
The big question they're going to have is, well, how much is it going to cost us to get that energy out? And if I say, well, you make three times the amount of energy than we use, then there's no more argument. It's an economic problem. We solve the economic problem. So much can happen after that.
Well, it's incredible to see what has come from an original conversation of us at a birthday party saying, hey, here's what our ambitions are. And you're out there doing it. I mean, all of this that you just walked through, you have an actionable, yes, I met with these people, we raised this money, and we're doing it on the back of data and performance. We can answer the question around it because you put the telemetry in. And I think that really takes it from a vapor conversation to an economic conversation that's backed and audited.
You know how we came up, do you know how that thought really was like just so transparent to us? A few years ago, I think everybody might remember when all of a sudden the banks started had to being really transparent about e-transactions.
Yep.
I had the opportunity in my career between the military and local about 10 years ago to be on the writing team for the technology group to write the taxonomy on how one bank is going to guarantee funds transfer without loss, interest loss, long delay, all these type of things while the government was imposing the know your customer and money laundering and all this type of stuff. And that experience told me that the roadmap ahead is a measurable future, no matter what industry it is. And so when I stepped into the clean energy, environmental impact and carbon capture space, I realized that there was no standard. Like that has been one of the biggest problems. In the last 6 years, though, a standard has been written. Several standards have been written. And I'm happy to say that we've been on the forefront. We exceed every standard that has been set. And I think we're insulated on any changes to that for decades. I'm not so sure how we could make our technology more sustainable without innovation of, you know, maybe stainless steel could be made with solar power, you know, like that we're talking about, you know, really minimizing the amount of change. So like what we're doing right now is a stable solution. And it's that measurement system that was baked in throughout that technology that is really been the difference between us and 20 other competitors that are going for a big project. And that's, I can capture carbon at the molecular level and I have the data to prove it.
So in doing this, and I'll go back to our conversation 3 years ago, now you're working with organizations around the world.
Yep.
You've had some great traction with the validation of your equipment, your software, the results, all checking out.
Yeah.
What's next for Local? What's coming up in your near future, next year?
Next year for Local is to really see the expansion of Rainmaker technology and its adoption rate. You know, we've got over $500 million in pipeline interest at this point, internationally and domestically. So rising to that challenge, you know, it's one thing to spend years to build a thing once.
Yeah.
It's another thing to build it 100 times, service it, support it. And so the next era of the technology is the company is growth. Growth into a name that people will recognize. Many people recognize it intra-industry. When it comes to biochar, Local technology is up there as the number one in America. But when it comes to, you know, people being aware that this technology is even possible and available, that's my big campaign going forward. And that is me to walk into city mayors and city planners, or go to large farm, go to project developers. You know, we've got a pellet mill operation that you know, we believe could be a complete transformation of that entire complex.
What is a pellet mill? Because I want to ask you, who are your customers? But let's start with
pellet mill. You know, we'll talk with, I won't use specific names, sure. But I will say that there's this industry where you grow a crop of, say, pine wood.
Okay.
Various types. You've got loblolly, you've got southern yellow. They're all kind of the same, a little bit different. Sorry for all the molecular and chemists out there and all that. Yes, there are some differences. Petey. Yeah. But for the most part, the idea is this. I grow crops in order to have them cut down and turned into one of two things, paper or energy. There's timber, of course, for housing and all this stuff. But what I'm saying is it's either going to be used as a factor of wood or it's grown as an energy crop. Pellets are an energy crop. And so you monocrop out thousands of acres of a particular type of species. You grind it up and then you press it into these pellets that are now used in all these wood fire grills. The biggest problem with the economics on that is
like you're really talking about Traeger pellets.
Traeger pellets. Yeah, okay. We're talking pellet mills, okay. Traeger pellets. So we use Traegers for our backyards, but other countries that we export this stuff to uses it to power their cities.
Yep.
Now, just imagine the cost of growing a crop, cutting it down, grinding it down, forcing it into these pellet forms, putting it in large trucks or onto a railhead, sending it to a freight
ship,
you know, to ship, sending it all the way across the ocean, unloading it, getting it distributed out to the different areas, and then using it. We're talking 40 to 50, 60 cents per kilowatt hour is what your levelized cost of energy is in these scenarios. 5-6 times that in certain areas, just impossible.
Unapproachable.
So then you have EPA standards that have continued to tighten down on these types of manufacturing processes that kick out sulfides and other problems that are hazardous to the air. So these businesses, the industry is closing on them. The economic gap is becoming wider to sell these things at a profit, and the regulatory environment is gripping tight on emissions. So there's like 75 of these things all throughout the country, major, huge, millions of tons type of, you know, opportunity. They don't know what to do with all these stranded assets. Now, you could just call it bankrupt and let it rust and sit out there like we've seen all across the Southeast with old oil, you know, systems. Or we can repurpose it, which is part of my sustainability mission. So the approach that we took was, what if we were to convert all your pellets into energy while also capturing all the carbon out of it and not allowing for any of the negative emissions? And we started doing the analysis. It looks like there are, you know, at least 20 opportunities throughout the country where a major transformation of this nature could happen. And it would completely revitalize that plant, the community around it, without putting any negative emissions in the atmosphere. That is a home run type of project that I'm talking about. It does not require a massive industrial buildup. You know,
it's invisible to the public.
To a certain degree, yes.
Yeah, short of knowing what the big box is that showed up.
But to the leaders of the communities, they'll see a bump in their tax basis. And to the members of the community, they'll see an increase in jobs around it. That's where they'll see it. But they won't see a big plume.
Yeah.
They won't smell a horrible smell that's coming from a paper mill. I don't know how many people can close their eyes and go through Arkansas and smell the paper mills like I could growing up. Yeah, they're horrible.
Yeah.
You know, and so air pollution, noise pollution, energy consumption. These are the things that our society runs across in rivers and streams. And so that's where I live. You know, I'm not the open AI guys. They're going to figure out the artificial intelligence that's going to replace humanity, like, you know, and all that stuff. But I do believe that we have to use modern technology to solve modern problems.
So as we wrap up, and one, thank you for your service. Two, what an incredible position in the last 3 or 4 years that you've put yourself in to present this and to have, and I just really value the data and the results and the actionable next steps. Who are your customers? What's your call to action for those cities and other stakeholders? Who are they?
So the first customer I would tell you out there, the people that are out there as entrepreneurs that really see the waste piles around them. They have the waste, they have the space, they have the passion and desire. I have the technology stack and the know-how and the networks to make that happen for you. Yeah. So for anybody that's out there wanting to get into this business, you know, we can help create that business model with them. The second group would be your transformational, large private equity owned companies that buy up industry and help shift it. And so just as you've seen large swaths of land that's been turned solar and wind, there are massive opportunities in forest residuals and waste reclamation and hubs. So I'll give you an example. There's a place out in Kansas called the Kansas Proving Grounds, definitely subsidized by the local government. It's supposed to be a sustainability technology hub. They want to be able to demonstrate, you know, how can we take railroad ties and pallets and convert them into hydrogen energy through an electrical, you know, electrolysis, so that they can help power, you know, hydrogen fuel production in that region. Like, these are the types of, you know, these types of big projects. And then lastly, your downstream customer. You have Microsoft, you have Spotify. They're always announcing these major carbon purchases. As people are looking at where they can place an investment that has a growing marketplace, sustainability and carbon capture, methane abatement, which is sort of the world that we're in, is growing at 25% annually right now. It is the time to get in. So either you're investing into the futures of the productivity of this company, so our future carbon offset, or you just want to participate by investing into us. They're so nested together. I mean, it's not a world where I'm going to go build an app that helps you get food delivered and I'm going to have an investor out of New York City that says, I think that bangs with a 4 to 5 year exit. What we're talking about is an enterprise that builds and spins off other companies and other business opportunities. So that's where I would say, like, large corporations that want to build large tranches of futures that they can rely on with a modern tech stack, your local, your entrepreneurs around the world, and your large fund transformation type of companies that want to come in and take over large assets and repurpose them.
Well, Miles, thank you for being here today, helping us understand really the reality of sustainability in this use case and the future opportunity. I think it is an entrepreneurial space that a lot of people are looking and trying to find success in. And yep. I want to celebrate local and the success that you're seeing. Thank you. The impact that you're making and the fact that you want to do it locally means a lot. So thank you for the way you're building Texas.
You know, I got one more thing about building Texas. You know, we're raising money. Our potentially our last equity round that we'll ever raise. We're going to do $24 million, in which I've specifically requested out of the whole investment strategy that, you know, 10 to 14 million of that be inserted right here in the Hill Country, because this is where my family is. This is where all my founders and my business partners are. Yes, we work with in the Northwest for manufacturing, and we have clients all over the globe. But bringing the ability to have advanced research and development facility here, yep, a place where other entrepreneurs with sustainability technology can come and use either our testing equipment or can incubate with us, and aligning to that DOS Greenhouse sort of mission, that is my focus right now. So if there's anybody out there that's been looking to place an investment, whether it's in the future stake of the delivery of our carbon credits, which is an investment track on itself, or they're interested in an equity position or a debt position, we're flexible. We have a well-built financial model behind everything. We have a very stable financial outlook. We're raising money because we have an opportunity to become the industry leader, not just in America, but across the world. And now's the time for anybody that wants to see a company that's got the foundational technology to have their breakout moment, so that in 5 to 7 years from now, we are the number one globally recognized technology provider for this specific space. That's what we're here to do. And I didn't start this with the idea that I was getting out quick. I started with this idea that we were going to grow this thing until it busted at the seams, and then we're going to grow some more.
So Miles, if someone's hearing this episode and they want to learn more, where can they find you? Where can they go read more about you?
Well, the first thing I would go to, it's traditionally be our website, www.locoal.com. That's spelled L-O-C-O-A-L, as in low coal. We're really present on social media when it comes to LinkedIn. As a professional business, we tend to interact mostly on that. And so you can go to LinkedIn, to our local page. But my co-founder also posts a lot of videos on Instagram. So if you go to @local on Instagram, you'll be able to see a lot of the behind the scenes and more about what the heart and soul of our company is about. Not so much business there, but much more about our passions.
Well, you're well on your way, and I applaud you and the team for the success so far, and look forward to celebrating it in a future episode.
Thank you so much, Justin. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Miles.